Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome, everybody. It is Erev Shabbos. The Parsha this week is a double, Vayakhel Pikudei. So that means we conclude the book of Shmos. And I just noticed that on my handout sheet, I only wrote Vayakhel. Mm-hmm. So that should be corrected. But the verse is from Vayakhel. It's the pretty well-known verse about a very well-known mitzvah, the mitzvah of Shabbos. And let us take a look at the way that the Torah refers to Shabbos. Shabbos is mentioned a number of places in the Torah, particularly in the book of Shmos. It was referenced in Bishalach in connection with the manna, because we were not permitted to collect manna on Shabbos, nor would it fall. In the Ten Commandments, Shabbos is prominent. In the Parsha of Kisisa of last week, we have a paragraph on Shabbos. And then again in Vayakhel, it's introduced in the beginning. So let's read the first three verses of Parshas Vayakhel. Vayakhel Moshe es kol adas b'nei Yisrael vayomer aleihem ele hadvarim asher tzivo Hashem la'asos osam. This introductory verse, Moses assembled the entire assembly of the children of Israel and said to them, these are the things that Hashem commanded to do them. Sheshes yamim teose melacha ubayom hashvi'i yihye lochem kodesh shabbat shabboson lashem kol hosevo melacha yumas. And this is our verse. On 6 days work may be done, but the seventh day shall be holy for you, a day of complete rest for Hashem. Whoever does work on it shall be put to death. This idea of put to death is, as in, whenever the Torah says that, it's in reference to the proceedings of the Jewish court when it was extant, and a person was passed all of the qualifications, which was almost nil, that he would, and then the Jewish court would administer the death penalty. But it was rarely occurred that all the conditions for that was met. We kind of get the idea that Hashem didn't really want people to die. He wanted people to live and keep the Shabbos. So a person had many opportunities to get with the program, so to speak. Lo sevaru esh b'chol moshvoseichem b'yom ha-Shabbos. You shall not kindle fire in any of your dwellings on the Sabbath day. Now, what's interesting about the mention of Shabbos here is because the rest of the Parsha is about building the Mishkan. It's not about other mitzvahs. It's about building the Mishkan, collecting the materials. Now, we had already had that in Terumah, but this is the Parsha which records that Moshe actually spoke to the people, asked them to donate, and they did, and they actually built the Mishkan. Terumah was just when God was talking to Moshe. So why mention Shabbos here at this juncture? So it's well known that there are several connections. Connection number one is that Shabbos supersedes the building of the Mishkan. We may build the Mishkan 6 days a week, but on Shabbos we all have to stop building. Connection number two is that what defines prohibited melacha, prohibited work on Shabbos, it is those same steps or processes that are used in building of the Mishkan. That is, the 39 categories of forbidden Shabbos work were all employed in the construction of the Mishkan. As a matter of fact, in my understanding, that is the sum, represents the sum total of unique and distinct acts of labors that a man can do. I don't know if there are any more that would be independent categories. So it's almost as if God was saying, we're going to build this Mishkan utilizing every possible human creative faculty, creative act, and on Shabbos we're going to cease from every possible human creative act. So that's the well-known connection. What I thought we would do today is take a look at one of the most prolific writers of the Jewish modern world, Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. I could see a person getting very serious about studying Rabbi Hirsch's writings because he, as I say, was one of the finest in the modern world. Just read some of his exposition on the Jew who keeps Shabbos. Because Rav Hirsch lived and led at a time when the Jews were leaving traditional orthodoxy and observance by the droves. The reform movement was picking up speed. People were enlightened. People were educated. They started to view Judaism as old, as archaic. And Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch, everyone I see says he was almost like a single-handed soldier effort to try to impress upon the intelligent, secular Jewish world that there was a lot of intelligence and a lot of depth and a lot of beauty in the Torah. And he kind of created a whole new lexicon for talking about Torah and about commandments. So this is a classic. Rav Hirsch's part of his exposition on Shabbos. It's not even all. I looked in his, we've got a set over there called the Collective Writings of Rav Samson Raphael Hirsch. 8 volumes. He wrote in German. This is translated into English. But he has like a chapter on every paragraph in the Chumash that deals with Shabbos. So this is only one of them. So this is the one that deals with the prohibition against work. He has another one about remembering Shabbos, another one about Shabbos is a sign, etc. This is only one. For extra reading, if we have time, I copied a few biographical notes about Rav Hirsch, which I think we would find interesting as well. So the title of the class is Shabbos Observance for Parshas Vayakhel. We have the verse, and then we have a question. What is the rational explanation for the prohibition against Shabbos labor? Samson Raphael Hirsch lived from 1808 to 1888. Most of his rabbinical career was lived in Frankfurt, although he was not originally from Germany. The essence of Shabbos is not affected by your hearing the sermon in the synagogue or missing it, or even whether you have said your prayers or not. Okay, contrary to popular belief, Shabbos is not defined by attendance to synagogue or by hearing a sermon. Shabbos Shabboson, the expression of the Torah, a day of complete rest, says your God. Rest from work is the center of the Shabbos observance. I remember Rabbi Emanuel Feldman, who is in town now, Baruch Hashem, he's going to be speaking on Sunday, but he recalls so many stories, but he recalls a conversation he had with a congregant who didn't live close to the shul and wasn't in walking distance, and he would drive to shul. And Rabbi Feldman used to say to the man, you know, I really don't want you driving to shul on Shabbos. I wish you didn't drive. So he said, Rabbi, are you telling me that you don't want to see me in shul? Does it be an excuse to not come anymore? He says, oh no, I want to see you in shul. Rabbi, are you saying that it's all right for me to drive to shul on Shabbos? No, I'm not saying that. You should not drive to shul on Shabbos. Well, then you don't want me in shul. I want you in shul. He says, Rabbi, make up your mind. So he said, Sam, or whatever his name was, I want you in shul on Shabbos, but I don't want you to drive. That's what I'm saying. So, that's what God says. God says, I don't want you to do malacha. It says nowhere that he who does not listen to a sermon on the Shabbos or omits prayers and song has transgressed the Shabbos. But the law states clearly that he who does work on the Shabbos forfeits his life. Isser malacha, refraining from work. That is the concrete sign God expects of you on every Shabbos. It is the sign that you acknowledge God as the creator of heaven and earth, to whom you and all your resources belong, and to whom they are consecrated. For 6 days the world is yours. Now he launches into the rationale. For 6 days the world is yours. For 6 days you may exercise melacha on all the things God has created, placing on them your own creative stamp, as you transform them into the finished objects of your will and purpose. God says, the world is yours, man. Do with it what you would like. Be creative. Make your mark on the world. But that's for 6 days. However, on the seventh day, you shall declare that the world is not entirely your domain, that it is not you who is the Lord and Master, but that you are merely God's servant on earth, living and working by his grace. Through Isser Melacha, the prohibition against work, you place yourself in your world reverently on God's consecrating altar. Through Isser Melacha, you elevate the 24 hours of the Shabbos, it's really 25, once you take the twilight into consideration, to a universal offering to your God and to your own consecration. Because what does that say about you? If you submit yourself as a servant of God, what does that say about you? That consecrates God, but then in turn it consecrates yourself. Listen how he, just so beautifully and with literal flair, he writes, God is more glorified by the animal that you do not catch on the Shabbos, by the plant that you do not pluck, and by the material that you do not shape, more so than by all the masters of rhetoric and poetry. People say, what glory for God when we behold the wisdom of man, how he's able to create, how man has the intelligence to be able to write and to discover and to invent. Okay, that's true, but it's even more glorified for God when man says, I do not work on Shabbos. The Jewish child that refrains from catching the butterfly or picking the flower on the Shabbos glorifies the Almighty Creator more effectively than the most impressive cantor and Shabbos service. The Jew who cannot be lured into committing a Shabbos desecrating activity by the prospect of profit or pleasure contributes far more to the sanctification of God in man's world than the tears he might have shed in the synagogue and then hurry to open his business. Because that's something that people need. We need to realize that priorities and values are not set by us. We have a certain feeling. We feel what would be considered, you know, good for God. We feel that by davening fervently, we are giving glory to God. If we cry, and what he's trying to say is that we're not the arbiters of what is glory for God and what isn't. What we might think may be quite the opposite. That's like what he's saying. It's far more glory for God just to sit there and don't pluck that plant than any great creativity or any great even prayers. Now, then he makes another point. And this is something which probably people rationalize even today. And what they say is, all right, I understand that I'm not supposed to open up my shop. I understand that I'm not supposed to work for my living on Shabbos because it's God's world. But what's wrong with doing some of those activities if I'm completely relaxing, or I'm doing it for leisure or for pleasure, or, as the man would argue to Rabbi Feldman, I'm driving to shul? What holier purpose could there be? Now listen to what he says, and this is where he really focuses on the beginning of this parsha. Do not surmise that the prohibition of work on the Shabbos is only effective if it is done for mundane purposes, such as business or earning a livelihood. That's what you shouldn't work. But that this prohibition is inoperative when it serves your entertainment, relaxation, or education.
Is it operative or inoperative?
Inoperative. Yeah. But that this prohibition is inoperative when it serves entertainment, relaxation, or education, I put in the phrase, or even attendance to synagogue. And how do we know that's true? Besides that the codes of Jewish law do not differentiate, but how can you make that argument from a rational point of view? He says you don't have to look farther than what it says in the Torah here. Could you really conceive of a higher and holier purpose to which man's creative talent could have been dedicated than the work of which God had said, make for me a sanctuary, and I shall dwell in your midst? Is there anything holier than that? Did not the construction of the sanctuary combine man's characteristic activities in his conquest of nature and social relationships from the first groundbreaking to the transfer of the finished material from the private ownership to the public treasury? And yet God placed the Shabbos above the building of the temple and said, only keep my Shabbos, for this is the sign of recognition that I, God, sanctify you. There's a certain way that you cannot sanctify me by anything that you can do for me. Even if you build me a temple, you cannot sanctify me as much as you can by saying, I put my axe down. There's no other way. If there's no other way to sanctify me, that's as strong as that. And then he ends off with like a note of inspiration. Let us prove ourselves as Israel's sons. Let us hold the Shabbos high for us, for our children, and our children's children, as the everlasting covenant with God. Let our Shabbos observance serve as witness among our fellow men to God's sovereign rule over nature and mankind. Then every Jew and Jewess will be sanctified, and the sage's word of wisdom will come true. The Shabbos is Israel's sanctification. Why is this man's shop closed? This is a quote from Midrash. Because he keeps the Shabbos. He who keeps the Shabbos bears witness to God Almighty for creating the world with his word in 6 days and resting on the seventh day. For it says explicitly, you are my witness, says God, and I am God. Isaiah 43:12. Mm-hmm. And that's how Rav Hirsch spoke to his generation. Typical to how he would speak about almost every part of the Torah.
Very nice. What is... I would think the greatest gift, a great gift, maybe the greatest gift that the Jews have given to the world is the concept of Shabbos, whether it's on Saturday, Sunday, or Friday, but the fact that people can rest, you know, that there's, you know, reflect on the goodness of powers greater than yourself, namely God.
Senator Joe Lieberman agrees with you. That's why he wrote a book, Shabbos, I forgot what the title was.
Shabbos
what?
It's about the experiences he had, I think, in Washington.
Also growing up, because he grew up with it.
Actually with his grandmother, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure his parents didn't do so much.
Okay.
His grandmother is the one that incorporated it into his life. He went away from it. I didn't read the book, but I read excerpts.
Right. Well, I heard him speak at the Jewish Book Festival.
Okay, so you know more about it.
Yeah, but what he's trying to do is what you said. He's trying to teach. He wrote it not just for Jews. He wrote it for the world. He says the world would be a greater place if everybody kept Shabbos. Okay, that's not necessarily the Torah, you know, the Torah message.
Christians keep Sunday,
but
and the Muslims keep Friday.
Nobody keeps much of anything anymore.
Well, you know,
the Muslims probably keep Friday more than the Christians keep Sunday.
Well, they go to church. And they don't drink on Sunday.
So it used to be that everything was closed
that's
on
changing.
Sunday. It used to be that they didn't work on Sunday. It used to be that it was a very family-oriented day, and it's not that much anymore. It's more like the day to go out and garage sales and specials
was,
and all that kind of stuff.
Was the drugstore. The drugstore was the only thing open on Sunday, and it was quote-unquote allowed. This is even up in the north, where they're not so religious up there. I think the basic difference between their Shabbos and our Shabbos is we have specific rules what you can and can't do. And the one thing I've always found interesting is once religion gets to the United States, it's put under the extreme test. You look at Catholicism. Catholicism through the world, through history, good, bad, or indifferent, they had certain rules. Everything was done in Latin. The services were done in a certain way. Get to the United States, people think, the parishioners say, you know, I don't think I like that part of it, or I think I want to do this. And the religion changes because the people who are practicing the religion say, I think the religion, the way the Pope and the bishops and whoever say it came down, I don't think I like that so much. Well, that's exactly what happened to our religion when it got, well, in Germany, firstly, but also over here. The people started saying, you know, I see it differently over here than I saw it over there. I think I can do it differently. I think we can do better. Conservative reform come up. And you can see they're falling, that the religion completely dies at that point in time, at least the way we would look at it. So this, I think, is an effort for us to say, you know, Shabbos was given to us, and God told us how to do Shabbos, and we're not going to, and there's some interpretation by the sages, but the modern Jews, modern Orthodox Jews, I'm not saying modern Orthodox, but modern Orthodox Jews, don't question what the sages say. We follow it the way it's supposed to, the way Rabbi Hirsch is trying to keep it together. Because once it starts changing, we're just like the rest of the world, and the religion falls apart, completely falls apart.
And the other people...
So I guess what I'm saying is, we have to listen to the sages. We're not trying to tell the sages what's right.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Just like I think the Catholics are making a mistake taking Latin out of their liturgy.
Yeah.
We might be making a mistake taking Hebrew out of our liturgy.
That's interesting. You know? That's interesting.
Yeah. It's, you know, when you all of a sudden everything is in English,
well,
it's just universality.
So this is, okay, that's an entree for this little biography about Rav Hirsch, because he was unique in that he embraced the vernacular. And we're going to see just how much in this little, this is just an excerpt of a talk that was given in 2009, which marked, how many years would that have been?
1888, he died. So it's about 9 years.
Was
that
1888? It would be 08, well, maybe 100 years since his birth. No, 200 years since his birth. Right? If he was born in 1808, and this was done in 09. Okay. So
yeah, because
200
the
years.
By the Hebrew
coming
day,
around.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
That would have
been 200. Here we go.
Okay, so this was transcribed online, and I just picked a few things which related to his attitudes towards secular learning, and particularly language. It says here, this is a talk given at Flatbush Ladies Group on 8-22-09, excellent biography of Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, Architect of Torah Judaism for the Modern World by Rabbi Eliyahu Meir Klugman. Okay. Yet the influence of his writings was even greater, for they reached a much greater audience and had also a significant impact on future generations until this very day. Rabbi Hirsch's gifted pen produced a rich and varied output. Halacha, commentaries on the Chumash, the Psalms, Jewish prayer book, articles on philosophy, Jewish Weltanschauung, and education, polemics, letters, and responses. All his writings included his letters and halachic responses, were stamped with his unique style and characterized by a warmth of feeling and a sense of closeness to God. His skill at capturing the sanctity and sublime beauty of Jewish life remains unparalleled. It's more than 100 years ago. His style is characterized by long sentences, quite typical for this period. It shows his perfect command of German language and literature. Rabbi Hirsch employed his mastery of German prose and modern literary techniques in the cause of classic Judaism. In these times, the literary sophistication of this Orthodox rabbi took everyone by surprise. You know, you would typically hear these kind of writings coming out from a maskil, one who adopted enlightenment. Mm-hmm. When you heard the language of the modern day scholar with the message of the old rabbi, it was like, what an unusual combination. His Hebrew writings, mostly responses, are written in a very special style too. Okay. His writings had a particular influence on the younger generation and continued to affect German Jewry in the decades after his passing. His commentary on the Chumash, for example, was found in every home of religious Jews in Germany. So he had acceptance. Now, I don't know, maybe you know, whether he was accepted by the Eastern European community during his time. Maybe they just wrote anyone off that was educated in, you know, secular institutions, or maybe they said, you know, thank goodness there's somebody who's speaking up in that country. But it sounds from here like his writings were embraced. Okay, now here comes his own philosophy. Rabbi Hirsch's attitude toward German was not the same as that of the other traditionalists of his time who were conversant in that language. To the latter, it was a language they knew and employed, but nevertheless a non-Jewish language. I guess they would much rather speak Yiddish. But Rabbi Hirsch, on the other hand, had a deep emotional feeling for German and a strong attachment to German culture that also went far beyond the modest requirements set down by the conservative maskilim, enlightenists, who advocated practical subjects as necessitated by social and economic considerations. He was even more emphatic than they were. Even though he was pushing for remaining a traditional observant Jews, Rabbi Hirsch had been educated in a gymnasium focusing on humanistic studies. Influenced by the atmosphere in his family, who encouraged secular studies, he appreciated the humanistic spirit which permeated the German culture climate as well as the aesthetics. So he didn't shun what he had learned. He embraced it and he used it. In the first of the 19 letters, which was one of his books, I'll read this carefully, just to read till the end of this paragraph. Rabbi Hirsch makes his imaginary protagonist remark. How can anyone who is able to enjoy the beauties of a Virgil, a Tasso, a Shakespeare, who can follow the logical conclusions of a Leibniz and a Kant, how can such a one find pleasure in the Old Testament, so deficient in form and taste, and in the senseless writings of the Talmud? Now, when I read that, I took a double take. What, did he used to think that? No. He was playing devil's advocate. But he thought, he sympathized with the modern thinker, and he was like looking at it from their perspective, because he knew their perspective. But before Rabbi Hirsch, no Orthodox Jew had ever expressed such sentiments, even as a prelude to their rebuttal. There was no question he was going to stick up for the Torah and show how it was in fact the most beautiful, the most scholarly, the most intellectually sound of any literature. But he sympathized. He did not hide the fact that he was a proud, student of German culture. The concept of Torah im Derech Eretz, Torah combined with a certain worldliness, universal and timeless, in the doctrine of Rabbi Hirsch, has been defined as a synthesis of Judaism and modern culture, embracing art and literature to the extent compatible with halacha, religious Jewish law. However, this synthesis is to be understood in a Hegelian sense. Hegelian. Two contradictory forces contending with each other are reconciled and renewed on a higher level. In other words, Torah and life, Judaism and culture do not just complement each other. In fact, we've talked before about how there may be a spin-off of Torah Im Derech Eretz that became kind of like a dual system, dual curriculum. We do this and we do that. That's not what Rav Hirsch felt was the synthesis. But rather, like Rabbi Weinberg used to say, there's only one world. There's not two worlds that we both partake in. There is one world. And that's what Rav Hirsch, I'm understanding, to mean. They don't complement each other. They achieve a complete identity. Okay. In his old age, Rabbi Hirsch devoted most of his teaching activity in his school to a subject which he called the spirit of the Jewish theory of laws. In those lessons, he strove to implant in the hearts of his students a love of Torah and to inspire them with the consciousness of Torah Im Derech Eretz as the unifying principle of all the religious commandments, molding them into a uniform context of a harmonious Weltanschauung and life pattern. And that is Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch.
Very nice. Comment on Hegel's concept is...
Okay.
Hegel says there are three things. There's thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. In other words, you got this, you got that, you put them together, and you get a Weltanschauung, a world view of what's going on. That's what Hegel said. It took me a long time before I could understand what Hegel had to do with anything. I keep it possible. Long sentences. But that's what he's saying. So it's all right, if I understand what you're saying, that we can talk here in English rather than the Ivrit. Is that right?
You know, Rav Hirsch would say, not only is it allowed, but it is encouraged, because if that's the way, if that's our language, if that's what speaks to us, if that's what we feel a connection to, then we've got to bring the Torah into that language. And that would be, I gather, that would be the reason to embrace something like an art scroll that is, you know, trying to create a new culture of English Torah literature. Whereas maybe some others would say, it's a necessary evil, let's do it only as much as we have to, but let's not be so proud of it. No, no. Torah Im Derech Eretz says, this is the definition of Torah in our generation.
And it can, in other words, you can have Derech Eretz.
No. You need to. You must, because if you try to divorce the two, you're either going to get very unhappy religionists or irreligious culturalists. And what we really need is happy, cultured Jews. So we need to combine the two. That's the Torah. I think Torah Im Derech Eretz, the emphasis is on the Im, with. And it's not, it's okay. It's not a little bit, but that is the what is required in any given time, is to synthesize the Torah with the particular Derech Eretz of that time. And maybe we need to be more proactive and more creative in trying to find the synthesis of a Torah Im Derech Eretz in our times. You know, I don't know. Maybe we need to. It's like in America, maybe in the 60s or 70s. The Rebbes were American kids and they grew up playing basketball, so they went to their Rosh Yeshiva, who was maybe from Europe or whatever, and said, Rebbe, is it okay for me to play ball with my students? And the Rebbe said, only if you're good.
There was a big question whether you could play tennis on Shabbos, and the answer was yes, you can.
Here, a conversation.
That's a matter of love.
You mentioned
love. Got it.
Lieberman's book. I will share a conversation I had with Joe. I'm from the Haven, Joe's from the Haven.
Oh.
We're both on the... He was at Young Israelites at Westville Synagogue. We moved over to Westville. I've known Joe for years. So Joe is running, and this has to do with Shabbos. Joe is running for some office in Connecticut, Attorney General or something like that. It's on a Saturday. And he sends a videotape. He's going to be nominated, and he sends a videotape thanking them for nominating him. So I said to him, the Young Israel, where he was, his that neighborhood,
was not far from downtown. You can easily walk downtown, go to the convention, shake hands with people, talk to people, maybe not speak with a microphone, so, but, you know, say hello, hi, thank you, and so forth. So I said to him, Joe, you could have gone to the convention, but you didn't. I said, why didn't you? He said, the reason I didn't go is because I could have gone and shook hands with people, no problem, nothing halakhically wrong with that. He said, but if I do that, every time there's a groundbreaking someplace, they'll say, oh, there's a hotel down the street you can stay at.
Mm-hmm.
This and that. He said, if I start, it'll ruin Shabbos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I won't start at all, then I won't. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to ask me, mm-hmm. and I won't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going a step beyond,
mm-hmm.
and things
well,
like
keeping the
making a fence.
It's keeping the Shabbos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's making a fence, and it's keeping the spirit of Shabbos.
The spirit.
Not
right.
just the
right,
law.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so we never did.
Well, I think one thing about the language,
mm-hmm.
like if you're talking in science, if you're a scientist, the language, probably German or English, there's so much more that can be said and more people understand it, and you don't have the things in Hebrew, although the Hebrew has taken it in the modern Hebrew,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
they didn't have it in that. But when you're talking about, for instance, we discuss all this in English, but you know that there are many times where the English translation there falls really, it's not good at all, even in the Arts Girl. Living Torah sometimes is good on
mm-hmm.
certain things, but when you read it in Hebrew,
right,
understanding it in Hebrew on the sacred things, I think...
I don't think Rabbi Hirsch would argue with
yeah.
that.
I don't think he would either.
I think what he's saying, and this is, plays on the idea of literature and literacy, you know?
Yeah, I don't think he'd argue with what I just said.
The whole idea of having Art Scroll bring out these books, this is bringing us to literacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And as we become literate, then we can actually work the mm-hmm. Derech Eretz mm-hmm. in. If we're illiterate,
mm.
we can do Derech Eretz to the point of being mahalal, all sorts of things. But when we know the Torah,
mm-hmm.
then we know how to do the Derech Eretz
mm-hmm.
within Torah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what? So therefore, the language is required just to get
the
Torah in the door.
Right.
Otherwise, people won't understand it at all.
Right.
Okay. That's true. But I think that he went more than that. I think he said, what you're saying is for sure, but the Torah with the Derech Eretz is a positive.
It's
you know,
the way to go.
It's
I
the
mean,
way to
it
go.
It is the way.
Even in a sense, like in his own life. In other words, he didn't just say, I'm good at German, therefore I will be able to be effective at teaching Torah to my generation, which he was. But he actually appreciated it. He said, this is what Torah is to me. Because a Jew lives in the present.
Mm-hmm.
And a Jew lives in the world. And it is not in a vacuum. There's no such thing as Torah without the world. I mean, you could block out the world. And that's, I don't know if you remember, but Rav Volba, in that book that he wrote, Pathways to Torah, Life of Torah, when one of the chapters is how does the Jew live in the world? So he says there's two approaches. One is he tries to shut out as much of the world as he can, and the other one is, and he quotes Rabbi Hirsch, Torah im Derech Eretz. And he says, you know, pretty much we as Jews today live with both concepts. And there's a little bit of setting up, insular communities, but there's nobody can escape, nobody can totally avoid culture. But Rav Hirsch was introducing, and Rabbi Volbe describes it as a higher level. He says that's like Avraham, where you're so strong, you're so committed, you so well understand and integrate the teachings of Torah in your life that the world doesn't pose a threat to you. You're able to overcome it. So I think Rabbi Hirsch said it's a virtue, Torah im Derech Eretz, not just a survival technique.
Right.
It's a question of, and so I think some of the Orthodox schools say you should learn Jewish wisdom, not Greek wisdom. And by Greek wisdom, they mean geometry or philosophy mm-hmm. or science. And it might be that Yeshiva University
mm-hmm.
does not encourage anything other than Torah and medicine, maybe.
No.
Well, you know,
not
Rabbi
anymore.
Rabbi
Yehoshua
Rabbi Yehoshua
it's just the opposite.
No.
Yeah, just the opposite.
No.
You can learn geometry.
Absolutely. No, you picked the wrong school.
Yeah.
Wrong school. Well, I know they have a medical school. I know they have a medical school.
And there are many schools like in Israel. Well, they are really Orthodox, but they teach all the sciences.
That's Greek wisdom. Can we learn Greek? Are we allowed to learn Greek wisdom?
I think Rabbi Hirsch says yes.
Rabbi Yerucham Lovitz, Rabbi Volvi's teacher, right? He says the whole book of Bereshis mm-hmm. is the laws of Derech Eretz.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the starting point. We have to know mm-hmm. those laws. We have to follow those laws. Mm-hmm. We have to be machmir mm-hmm. in following Derech Eretz. Mm-hmm. We have to know those mm-hmm. things. And then we have to know Torah. Mm-hmm. But whenever there's a conflict mm-hmm. between Derech Eretz
right.
and Torah, Torah
right,
has
right,
to
right, right, exactly. Yeah, so right. let's say, for example, and Rabbi Hirsch would be the first one to agree with
yeah.
it. Let's say culture starts to ask us to compromise on our beliefs, on our observance. Then, you know, it's Torah in Derech Eretz. Torah right. first. So like what you were saying before. And it's not an easy existence to synthesize. And some people can't do it. Some people, when they expose themselves to culture, they get too sucked in. And it's a real threat. And it's happening in our Orthodox world today. Especially, you know, kids go away to school and expose. And not all of them are strong enough. So, like Rabbi Wolbe says, we need some of that survival technique to try to isolate ourselves. But we can't do it entirely.
Yeah. I'd be curious what Rabbi Hirsch would say if he lived in our generation now. I think he might have a little different idea. Simply because you're talking about going to school. It's not a question of being able to survive in school with the Judaism. It's a question of whether to survive with the anti-Semitism that is being espoused on college okay. campuses.
Right. I don't think
is that what's pushing it. Kids away because of the anti-Semitism, or just the culture and the assimilation?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah. Well, he had the same problems there in Germany. Exactly the same problem.
Oh right. Yeah.
And
I'm not saying how many people like flocked to him. I mean, he probably was a lone voice and. Yeah.
So this is not for now, but I will just say, because I've heard Rabbi Feldman, not Emanuel Feldman, I think, but his son, say that, you know, some people talk about they want to drive to shul,
mm-hmm.
and it's been expressed that if you drive 30 minutes there and 30 back, you're breaking Shabbos, but you can be 23 hours very, very Sabbath observant.
Right.
Whereas
right.
certain people who keep 24 hours supposedly, uh-huh. but have all these bad thoughts and they talk and
uh-huh.
they do all these
uh-huh.
other things, aren't really on the same level as the other person.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's a consideration
okay.
to make too.
That's fair.
Because you're not going to do much if you stay home. And
but if you look at the conservative movement where they allowed that to happen.
It happens here too though.
Well,
never, you don't say it's right. You don't say
right.
that it's right. You
but
don't tell them to
encourage.
Do it, but they can get. I've seen people come here and
get the
Kohen Aliyah
well, this,
after
this,
they drove, and you know, and it's
what I heard Rabbi Feldman say is that, and in all honesty, halachically as well, the fact that you're violating Shabbos 1 hour
right.
of Shabbos doesn't mean that you're not keeping it the
Absolutely.
Other 23. Okay. But he's not going to say any different than his father. It's better if you ask him, Rabbi Feldman, should I drive to shul or should I stay home?
Absolutely.
He's going to say stay
well,
home.
Well, people come to your house on Friday night, so you know you want them to come.
Right.
You just don't give them instructions on how to get there.
And not only that, we were taught by Rabbi Weinberg that if you want to invite somebody and you know that they don't live within walking distance, you have to say to them, we would be happy to provide Shabbos
right.
hospitality.
Right, it's up to them.
But you're not
going to
turn them down if they drive.
No.
No, the point I'm trying to make is that, according to the conservative, it's halakha that you can drive only to shul and back on
right.
Shabbos.
Right.
Okay, they encourage it.
If you don't live nearest to the
right.
Uh-huh.
Of course, it's just...
But
But we're talking about in the Orthodox. Yeah.
Right. When it came time to write the Mishnah, you're not supposed to write the Mishnah.
They could live in the
right.
suburbs.
But what are you going to do?
Exactly.
They wrote it down anyway.
That's an interesting question. So Dr. Brownstein is asking, just like we bent the rules when we started committing the oral mm-hmm. Torah to write in, mm-hmm. because otherwise we would have lost it. Will we say, let's say it came to it, where if we don't say that writing is encouraged, people are not going to keep Shabbos anymore, does that qualify for the same heter? Now, I'm not an authority on this, but I think the answer will be, does it work?
And I can
does
tell
it
you,
work?
From
so
a conservative rabbi, that it ruined community.
Mm-hmm.
Because then everybody had the license to move away,
mm-hmm.
and they all live. Somebody lives in this neighborhood, somebody lives in this neighborhood, somebody uh-huh. lives in this neighborhood, and the idea of community
uh-huh.
died with it.
I want to just share that after I started coming to Beth Jacob, I was in correspondence with the rabbi that I grew up with, a conservative synagogue. We wrote a few letters to each other. He was happy for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably right when I became observant, I wrote him a letter, and I said, you know, I'm really struggling with not being so angry with my parents because they never introduced me to the world of Torah Judaism. It's what I always, you know, needed and yearned for. And he wrote back and he said, don't be angry with your parents. You know, if anything, be angry at me. He said, because he was raised Orthodox. He went to an Orthodox yeshiva, but he said, I became conservative and I did these things because I felt otherwise the Jews, the people would just go away from Judaism.
Well, we haven't answered Dr. Brownstein's question, I don't think.
Okay, so I would say, you know, in retrospect, did it work? Did the heter, the license to drive on Shabbos, end up preserving Shabbos? Because, you know, did the writing of the Mishnah preserve the oral Torah? Certainly a lot more than had they not. You know, that assessment was correct. We are going to forget the Torah. And now we haven't forgotten as much as we would have. Does the fact that people drive to shul, has it shown to preserve Shabbos? I don't know if, honestly, we can say it has.
Might have preserved Judaism.
Maybe
100 years.
Yeah. No. And then maybe it did.
You're
going to have to wait a long time.
You have to know, right?
You
can't always judge.
A lot of people will.
You're not 1,800 years.
Preserve their Judaism.
That's true.
Their children later became more observant because they stayed in the...
But, you know, we're
not about... The other thing I wanted to say...
I think you're responsible for ourselves.
The other thing
they did.
But the mode of living has changed. You know, we're no longer small communities. Everybody lives in suburbia.
The other thing I wanted to
say,
so
you have the people,
what do you do? Is that concept of bending the rules in order to preserve may have certain exceptions. And I have a suspicion that Shabbos may be one of those exceptions. Why? Because there are three things in the Torah that are called a sign.
What?
A sign. An oath. One of them is bris, the other one is tefillin, and the third one is Shabbos.
What about kashrut?
It's not called a sign.
Okay.
So the Chofetz Chaim says, what is a sign? What's the difference between this mitzvah and another mitzvah? How come this called it a sign and this not called a sign?
Mm-hmm.
So he said, a sign, understand it very simply. You want to go to a store. You want to go to a restaurant. So how do you find it? You look on the sign.
Yeah.
And if the sign is up there, that means they're in business. But if you take down the sign, then you're saying, we're not open. So there's certain mitzvahs that are called signs because they are so central, so representative of what a Jew is, that if you take those signs down, you don't have a Jew.
Hmm.
So...
Shabbos,
Bris,
and tefillin, or kashrut.
Okay, apparently even more so.
Yeah.
So therefore, it could be that the rationale of bending the rules in order to preserve would not encompass Shabbos, just because it's so central.
Oh, it has to be.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.